Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints. Smoother than smooth, kind of like this show, kind of like the first hour. We'll see if we can do that in the second hour of the program. A little bit later in this hour, we will hear from the head coach, Mike Vrabel. You just heard from the general manager, John Robinson. That was brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. And he talked about his decision to let go of Vic Beasley, Bo Brinkley, and Joseph. J-Jo, I think that's what he called him, J-Jo. There's J.D. Yep. for Clowney, J-Jo. He spoke very highly of Brinkley. That's no surprise. When we've interviewed him, he's a great guy to deal with. But it's just one of those positions. You know what you're signing up for, right? I mean, you have one job. You have one job to do, and either you're going to pull it off every snap, and there's not much margin for error, or you're not. And if you make mistakes, unfortunately, that's how it works in this business. At the long snapper position, if you're good at it, who was it that we knew? Was it Mike Leach? Is that right, Willie, back in the day?
Mike Leach was a tight end for the Titans when he first came into the league and ended up being a long snapper
for what,
the Broncos
like 16
for a
years
ton
or something?
Of times. Oh, yeah. There's been some guys that have gone close to 20 years.
Yeah. So you can do it forever. I mean, it's a job. If you are masterful at it, you will have a long shelf life in the NFL. And by the way, Bo Brinkley, as we've talked about, he's been doing this for a while with the Titans, and we haven't talked about Bo Brinkley, which is a good thing because you don't really want people talking about the long snapper, because usually when they come up in conversation, it's what's happened the last couple of weeks. And unfortunately, that would end up being the demise of Bo Brinkley because we've been talking about him the last couple of weeks.
A one-week hiccup is one thing. 2 weeks, you got to make a change. It's just, it's too important. And you've got a struggling kicker. So who knows if this will be a little detail that will just change the energy. And who knows? We didn't get anything about the Brett Kern from Coach Vrabel.
Well,
maybe we will. I mean,
well,
from
Vrabel. Yeah. Maybe.
From Robinson. I'm sorry. But maybe we will from Vrabel. But who knows? You might have an entirely different battery.
But in
for
fairness,
the
was he asked?
No, he wasn't asked.
Yeah.
I don't think we got anything there because it wasn't asked. And maybe they don't know yet, but who knows? You know, like sometimes there's some pitchers that you switch the catcher, and all of a sudden the guy works with the catcher a lot better. So it's plausible that might help Gostkowski. It can't get much worse, right? Because even though he was glowing about Gostkowski, they just can't. They have to have better production from him, obviously. Or they've got to go the same route, even though they know he's a pro and they have tons of respect for him. He's been one of the best at his position for a long, long time.
How can you trust him right now? I mean, I don't think you can. Like, if you're in a situation, let's just say
trust
Gostkowski.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I know.
I mean, if you're in a situation,
you can't tell me there's not an uneasy feeling when you're lining up for a.
Well, think about it.
You wouldn't know it if you hear them. That's kind of what we're talking about at the end of the hour. You wouldn't know
but
that.
But that's just you're trying to – you know it's going to get back to him. So you're trying to continue to drive the message home to him that they still believe in you. But
right.
We know it's just human nature, right? When they line up for a field goal, you got questions.
Okay. So – but and here's going to be the test. If it's – let's say it's a game that will win them the division, get them in the playoffs, what have you. It's a big kick. And it's fourth and two, and it's one of those situations where it's a 45, 46, something like that. Does Vrabel stand there and go, yep, put three in the game, let's go, let's win this thing, or does he go, hey, Tannehill, can you pick that two up? All right, go do that. I mean, honestly, I think that decision gets much harder for Mike Vrabel.
or does it factor in on third and six if they go, hey – just so you know, you got two plays
to get this.
Get 4 or 5 yards here, and if you don't get the six, then we'll go for it. But you got two plays here,
You can't help but have it infiltrate everything you do. It's just like a baseball manager whose closer has been a little shaky, right? It affects how you manage the game. It's a weight on your shoulders that you don't want to have, that in a perfect world you don't even think about. You just go to your two-point chart, you go to your – you know, whatever you want to do, you don't want to have to think about the kicker.
Do you guys think that the Titans got duped by Vic Beasley?
Let me ask
okay, okay, that's where I'm going with this, Will. Or do you think they just had it in their mind, Mike Vrabel and his staff, we will just make him find his love for football? You know what I mean? We will reinvent Vic Beasley because that's what we do. Do they fall victim that a lot of teams and franchises have done in the past where there's always
maybe
that coaching staff that always feel
–
Well, Jeff Fisher was like that.
Sure.
I mean, he absolutely would go to Floyd Reese and be like, hey, we're good. Look, we've told the story many times. Jeff Fisher wanted Pac-Man Jones, and he went to Floyd Reese and said, hey, I got him, okay? I will control him, everything. I can handle this. I'm good. He's dynamic. This kid is special. I'll make sure that he's on the up and up. And we know how that turns out. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of coaching staffs have fallen victim of that. So do you think Beasley duped them and told them everything they wanted to hear before the signing? Or do you think it was they just thought, hey, we will fix this cat. He'll come in here and he'll be the guy where Atlanta will be going, why couldn't we get him to do that? What do you think? How would you answer that?
Well, I think a good question that was asked, I have to say, was, you know, if you didn't sign Beasley, who would have given him the same deal or a better deal? Right? So that's part of the equation, right? Is were they the only team that offered $9 million? Because if so, then you'd have to lean towards they did get duped, right? Because in hindsight, he wasn't worth anywhere close to that. It should have been more of a you got to play your way into an incentivized $9 million or something close to it. We're not giving you $9 million to start with, but John Robinson seemed to say that there were other teams in competition for Beasley. So other teams were willing to get duped too, because I guess the measurables, as he called them, were good enough that he was enticing. But that's not unlike a lot of players in a lot of sports, right? They tease you with their ability.
They're good in the interview.
As Herm Edwards used to call it, the two-staff guy, right? He gets the first staff fired, and then in the second staff, the second staff gets it out of him, right?
He did say that.
And he said, if you're a three-staff guy, then you're out of the league, right?
So you guys have not answered it.
I think John Robinson said it. He missed. It's on me. He got duped.
Okay,
right?
So he got duped. That's the end. That's what I want to know. You think he got duped?
Was it worth the shot? They were pretty desperate for a pass rush, right? So it was a $9 million gamble, and they lost.
The reason
he knew there was a chance they were going to get duped.
Chase,
right? It's
the
not
reason,
like he completely didn't know that this was a possibility.
Well, going back to what you said, and I brought this up yesterday on the show, I was like, we tried. We brought on anybody we could think of that we know, friend of the show, from Atlanta, from the area, that's covered the Falcons, covered Vic Beasley. Tell us about, you know, we're just begging somebody to go, hey, look, the Falcons, they're inept. You know, this coaching staff, they've already been cleaned out here. They couldn't figure out how to tap into Vic Beasley's talents and, you know, get everything out of him. But you guys, you know, Mike Vrabel and this, he'll be better in Nashville. Like, we couldn't get anybody to say something like, hey, you're in for something, you know, special. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the light doesn't turn green for him in Nashville, and away he goes with the Titans. We tried and we tried, and nobody. It was basically every time. In fact, Elijah, do we have what Domino said, Chris Domino?
Are you going to let me answer the question?
Hold on. Just hold on.
Chase is chomping at
that. We got time.
Very nice guy. Who doesn't want to play football?
Oh,
the idea that
boy.
Mike Vrabel might have actually been okey-doked on this one is amazing to me. It's amazing to me. Because Mike Vrabel, there's not a letter. You'd have to go so far beyond Z if you wanted to talk about their want on a football field. You know what I mean? Like, there's... You couldn't compare Mike Vrabel and Vic Beasley in the same sentence when it comes to the want to be on a football field. And that's why I'm a little bit surprised that it feels like, again, I don't know what the conversations were, but it feels like the Tennessee Titans got okey-doked. You can't look grown men in the eye and say you're going to do a deal like that and then all of a sudden go, yeah, I'll be there when I'm going to be there. I'd rather have an undrafted guy at a Southern Miss who is willing to, throw his body around like he's a launched missile just to impress somebody and then go, you know what it is? I'm happy to be here, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm worth every dollar you spent and more, but I won't ask for another dollar because I just want to, you know, I'm one of those guys who wants to prove I can be in this league. That's not who he is right now.
So when was that interview? I mean, how many months ago was that interview, Elijah? Do you have the date?
That was right when we signed him, or when we didn't sign him.
I feel like there were two. I feel like there were two
different. Are you saying that was back in March?
September.
Oh, that what we just heard was okay, because we did talk to him several times.
Right, because I just Ryan sent me a text this morning and said, "Hey, we used a clip of Chris Domino from your show." And it says he said September, but for some reason I did think
I think we did two different ones because that was the one that I remember because I said I feel like I'm singing a song. Do you remember that time in September? Isn't that a song? Do you remember? I almost
21st night of September.
Yeah,
to be specific.
Okay. Well, no, that's a different song. There are two. There's a lot of songs about September. I think more so than songs about November. But anyway. Guns N' Roses, November Rain.
November Rain.
We're going down a rabbit hole.
Where are you going?
I'm going to bring it back. We had Chris Domino on in September after all of the, why isn't he getting on the field?
Right,
what's the deal? Even today, John Robinson wouldn't say what it was.
Yep,
he said a medical issue.
Yep.
Well, what it was still
and by the way,
nebulous.
Stalled. Very. He was like,
Do I want to say? I'm not going to say.
Going to move on.
It was like, I felt like we were at a kickoff for a college football game.
Now we've really gone off the rails.
Could you tell us why Vic Beasley took so long to... medical issue. Can't talk about it.
I want to say it.
Pig, suey.
Just say it.
Have you seen...
Sam Kinison in the movie. Say it. Remember Rodney Dangerfield, the back to school?
Have you seen the Marty Messina?
We needed Sam in the crowd there to get him to say it.
Well, what I was thinking of was the SEC Network promo of Ryan McGee and Marty Smith in the truck.
Driving along in the truck.
Yeah, yeah. And then Ryan starts to do it again. He's like, okay, moment's passed.
But I think Chris Domino twice
basically said the same thing. He said,
put up the red flag and say, watch out.
Mike Vrabel got okey-doked.
Yeah, and we had Wes Durham on, and he said it in a nicer way, right?
Well, he's the play-by-play guy.
Yeah, he said it as a
professional play-by-play for the team would say it. And Vic Beasley is a very good person. They both said that.
Yep.
But there were motor issues, desire issues. Do you love to play? And they couldn't bring it out of them.
So that's why I don't believe they got duped. I believe, look, we tried. Okay, and we're just a radio show. They're a franchise, an NFL franchise, with lots of scouts and people they can talk to. They got way more inside info than we do. If we can get anybody to say it. So it was very clear that is what you're getting with Vic Beasley. Okay, how come they could? So the fact is, I think they could. They just said, "Yeah, we got it. We'll fix it." I know that's the narrative, but we'll be different. That's why I don't believe they got duped. I believe they just said, "Yeah. We know about Vic Beasley, but we're going to change him. You just watch."
I think they duped themselves.
Well, I think they knew some risks. So from that standpoint, I don't know if they got duped, but they probably got duped on the price. Because let me give you another example. If we'd have had the day that Mike Ribeiro, and I interviewed him on the day that they signed him, the Predators, a few years ago. Now, for those that don't follow hockey.
How long ago has that been?
That was the summer of 2015.
15?
The first year. No, 2014. It was the first year of Peter Laviolette. Okay? Mike Ribeiro was cut, bought out. The Arizona Coyotes said, I don't care how much we're paying, we can't have him here. We don't want him here. If you'd have had anybody from the Coyotes in an interview like we had with Chris Domino or Wes Durham,
they would have had nothing good to say.
They would have had nothing nice to say about Mike Ribeiro at all. They would have said, good luck. You get what you get. The warnings, just like we would have for Pac-Man Jones. Like, remember, we laughed at the guy we had on from Dallas.
Yes,
when he gave the spiel about, well, they're, you know, new setting for Pac-Man. All this, we started laughing. Like, good luck.
No, we literally laughed out loud and said, "Good luck with that." I mean, he was painting this picture like it's going to be fantastic in Dallas, and we were literally laughing at him going, good luck.
So we know the risk, right? These teams do know the risk, but they're willing to take the risk. Now, the best thing about it, I mean, the bad thing about it is it's $9 million. The best thing about it was, as he said, it's a one-year deal. This doesn't affect you next year, which would have been a double dupe.
Well, the better risk is you get him at the low price. That's the 1 year at a prove it deal. They didn't get a prove it deal. Remember, he got $9.5 million, and then he had incentives. Like, I think it was valued at up to $12 million. He did. So he didn't get a 1 year prove it deal. He got a 1 year deal. Like, hey, okay, you're the guy. Come in here, do your thing. Like, you're getting paid to produce.
It was a bad signing. Now, here's how I'll answer the question that you brought up. I think that they duped themselves, and here's what I mean by that. I think that there is I will admit that I have fallen into this, because I do believe that Vrabel has an ability to connect with his players. Maybe that's better than some. Mm-hmm. And that is because he's been on that side.
He's above average in that department,
yes,
for sure.
And so I think that we have seen him get more out of certain guys. Kamale Correa is an example that other teams couldn't. I mean, Kamale Correa, and you think they're regretting that trade today? Kamale Correa was a guy you never heard of, and he comes in here, and does he blow the doors off? No. But he became a depth player that when you called his number, he'd go out there and he'd do his darndest to make a play for you, and a lot of times he did.
That's what's odd about that trade, is I saw it the same way, Chase, but something went wrong there.
Yeah.
Because he would certainly look like a serviceable guy to have to put in there right now. Right now you're looking around going, who is going to play there?
Well, I think he had some red booty factor, because they brought in Clowney and they brought in Beasley. And so he saw his chances dwindle, and he got moved down the depth chart, and I don't think he handled it right. He said, I want out, I want to trade. And John Robinson, Mike Vrabel said, okay, see ya. Yeah, you don't want to be here, we don't want you here. And they moved on. Anthony Firkser is another example of a guy that, okay, who's Anthony Firkser? Makes a play. And so I credit Vrabel for that. And so I believe that there was a discussion. Okay, we know the rep on Beasley. John, you got friends in the league. I mean, John knew Thomas Dimitroff from Atlanta. I'm sure they could have had a conversation. Obviously, Vrabel knows a lot of people around the league. He had conversations. And I think that they simply thought Mike knows how to connect to the players. He can sit Beasley down, say, hey, you know, I played your position. I've seen you. Let's get you back to that. Knew all the right things to say. So that's and they should think that way. I mean, Vrabel has shown that he has ability to do that. It just simply did not work. And the reason that I lean that way is I read some of the quotes, you know, yesterday or the day before. It was he was not going to blast his player publicly. We had a very heated discussion about that. Well, today he gave the I'm just focused on the guys that are here and getting ready for the
which is a card he plays a lot.
It is fine. But I think you also see the disappointment.
Well,
of
that's when
he failed.
Avoiding the when he doesn't want to talk about when he doesn't have anything good to say. It's going back to that what I've said. Right. If you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all. That's what he does.
Right.
That's when you know he doesn't have anything good to say. When he does the, I'm just going to focus on the guys that are here on the roster.
Which is, it's a coach speak answer, and I get tired of coach speak answers, but at the same time, it's what you should do. I mean, you can't worry now. You can't worry about the past. You got a big game this weekend to try and turn things around for your football team. You've lost two in a row. This is a winnable game for you, but they're a 5-win team too. And they've been on the struggle bus. So you have to take advantage of this situation, and you can't worry about failures that you have had throughout the season. Now you got to try and get some victories.
I think that Vic Beasley, you know, one, he did dupe them. I mean, whatever he said to them, and I don't know how much, I don't think he strikes me as the type that, you know, sold them a bill of goods. I just think he was, yeah, I'm good. I'd be very interested in this and that. Yeah, I still got gas in the tank, this and that. I don't think he went overboard with it, but I think it was more on their end. And that's fine to feel confident in your abilities, because everybody at this level feels confident in their abilities. And that's what, you know, that's why they get paid the big bucks. They're very, this just in, coaches, players, front of, they're very confident people. You kind of have to be confident to do that profession. Okay.
Yes.
And you got to be thick skinned, and you got to, you know, all the stuff that comes with that job. So I don't really fault them for that. I guess I don't know how you fix that, because you, if you're a confident person, you believe in your abilities and you believe in what you can do, how do you balance? It's kind of like the analytics, right? If you got a good feel for a game, if you got a good feel for a roster, if, you know, the eyeball test, you're very good at it, but you also want to weigh in with analytics, it's that balance that you have to deal with, right? Like, well, mm-hmm. I see this, but the numbers are telling me this, so what is the right answer? Well, we see that we can fix him. We see that we can get production out of him, but the numbers are telling us we can't. In other words, the numbers being the data, the info. Like, talking to people, they're like, yeah, you should just stay away. Like, don't waste your time. That's the data, right? That's the analytics. Yeah, you should probably stay away. Like, you're not going to get what you think you're going to get out of him. The dude just, you know, he just doesn't have that. You know, you always hear certain players described as, you know, they got a green light, go, right? They're full speed ahead. He just doesn't have that motor. He's not wired like that.
Doesn't have that dog in him.
He doesn't have that dog in him. So the data's saying no. But you're going, yeah, but it's us. So so how do you balance that? Like, I don't know how you get past that moving forward. I mean, if you always believe in yourself and your staff and your crew and that you can do things differently than everybody else, how do you, even though you just got burned, how do you prevent this from happening again?
This is going to be the biggest challenge for Mike Vrabel moving forward, because with each year that passes that he's a head coach, he is even further and further removed from his time as a player. And as we know, the mentality of players changes. I mean, and it's changed a lot even since Mike has been out of the league. And so that ability to relate will always be there, but it's going to be different. And he's going to, for him to be considered a great coach and one of those guys that's going to be around for a long time, whether it's, you know, just be in the league, let alone what team, he's going to have to, what is it you always say, Darren? He's going to have to adapt and he's going to have to evolve. Now, do I believe that he's capable of doing that? Sure, absolutely. He's done it to this point. But that's the type of thing that's going to change, because the personalities of the players are going to continue to change. And I think this is a great learning moment for him as a head coach of, you know, he can't fix everybody. He tried to fix Kevin Dodd. Granted, it was short-lived, just like Beasley, but I think he got to a point where he realized, yep, this isn't going to work. We got to move on. At least, you know, with Dodd, it wasn't $9 million that they were leaving or letting walk out the door.
But it was the asset of a second-round pick using it on him. So, but we do, again, you have to look at big picture and be fair. It's easy to pile on when we're talking about this today, and it's a big story, and they've lost two in a row, and the defense is a problem. But nobody is going to go bat 1,000, right? Everybody, even the best GMs, have some whiffs. This is one of them. This was a big one. And Dodd was a big one, right?
The problem is, the problem is these are gigantic whiffs, right? I mean, you kind of hope the whiffs are a little bit smaller scale.
Right. You hope you get a couple of good games out of the
Remember
guy,
the Dodd, you know? Pick. See, but here's what you have to balance, okay? And this is what I've always said about general managers, because, yes, Willie, it is an inexact science. It's tough. You're throwing darts at all. Sometimes things stick. Sometimes they don't. But when you miss, it's, do you have that big comeback? You know, so you miss on Corey Davis being a number one elite receiver, albeit a good receiver, as we talked about yesterday, but not what you draft fifth overall. But then you come right back and you get A.J. Brown. So remember that draft, he's got 3 second-round picks. 3. And the first pick, which was almost a first-round pick because it was at the top of the second round, was Kevin Dodd. And it's like, jeez. But you could say, well, okay, that was a swing and a gigantic whiff when you had the opportunity. Man, 3 second round picks, you got to make hay. You got to make ground. You have to have impact players on your roster. You're not going to hit on all three. Okay, so he whiffed big time. But what else did he do in that second round?
He hit a grand slam.
Hit a grand slam. Yeah. And so Corey Davis wasn't what you drafted, but you hit so far, you've hit one out of the park with the next receiver.
So
that's
a good slugging percentage.
And then you whiff big time on that high second-round pick in that draft, but you hit a grand slam a little bit later in that round with Derrick Henry. So that's what you want to do. It's like, okay, David Poyle, you know, I don't like this move, and I didn't like this move didn't work out. Okay, yeah. But what about the trade for Philip Forsberg? You know, that's robbery of the century. I mean, it's going to go down as one of the greatest trades ever.
And that was the result of
Predators
a guy's
history.
That was the result of a guy not wanting to be there.
They
saying,
basically
hey, I want
gave
a trade.
Up nothing, and they got Philip Forsberg. So don't you get, you know, you get credit for that. You get like massive credits and markers, to use a casino term, right? You get markers for that because you don't. By the way, the trade for David Laquan was. Look, Cale Yarncroke isn't a star, but you gave up really an aging guy at the end, David Laquan, who did wonderful things for your franchise. You got Cale Yarncroke in return, which has been a very good player on your roster that you've been able, a utility guy, to move up and down your lines
for many years.
Right? So that's a great trade.
It would be interesting to... If you had a great formula to just take every general manager and do and see it where you come up in the plus minus of the markers, right? If you had a true evaluation of grand slams, like Cale Yarncroke would be a single or a double.
It's a hit, right?
It's a hit.
It's not a grand
slam. It's some form of a hit.
Forsberg is not a grand slam.
Forsberg
Derek Henry is
a
grand slam.
Right.
Yeah.
Mike Ribeiro, who we just talked about, a cast off who had issues, they got mileage out of him, right? That wasn't a whiff. Yeah. That was a double, maybe. Maybe more than that, depending on how generous you want to be. Pac-Man Jones went to Dallas, and he had issues, but then he goes to the Bengals, and he was the same kind of cast off there, and he was there for how long?
Yeah.
8 or 9 years.
Solid career.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, it's not a perfect science. You're going to get hits. You're going to get a single when you thought it was going to be a home run. I mean, that's how it is. But
Floyd Reese can tell you about having some hits and having some misses, right?
Oh, absolutely.
He has a good laugh about it today. But I remember when he was under fire, when you're under fire, everybody focuses on your misses. And when you're red hot, everybody focuses on what a brilliant move by the general manager to get this guy, right? And there's not a lot of in-between, right? When the truth is everybody's got hits and everybody's got misses, or else you don't have the job very long.
Yeah, I mean,
now it's going to be, in my opinion, like John Robinson, who's had misses, but he's also had some big hits. I mean, the DeMarco Murray trade was a great trade. The Dennis Kelly trade was a fantastic trade. Like that's you get big. Once again, it's like Cale Yarncroke. You didn't get a superstar, but you know what? You got a really serviceable guy that you're able to plug and play whenever you need him, and that's important. That's valuable, and you gave up nothing.
Kevin Byard,
nothing for
Kenny
him.
Vaccaro. I mean, you can go down. There's a lot of great moves.
So you get the right, but now he's had a little bit of a dip. Okay, so now it's going to be up to John Robinson to come back with some more big hits, because right now this draft class is a failure. It's a
right
failure
now.
Today,
right now.
Today.
That could
sitting
change.
Here in early November, it is a failure. This draft class was a failure right now on November 4th, but. This free agency
class.
Where's the
guy? Where's Cole McDonald? Where's the guy from Hawaii these days?
He's in Hawaii surfing.
He's not on a roster somewhere far off. No.
No. I don't even need to look it up. No, he's not.
He's not.
This free agency class was a failure. It is. It was a failure right now. It was. So now it's going to be up to John Robinson to go out and try to get some more big hits, right? Because now he's had some misses. So now it's time to come up with some hits, which he's done a good job of doing. He has misses. He follows up with some big hits. So he's had some misses here. It's time to follow up with some big hits. That's the way I look at it. All right, we'll come back. On the other side, we'll hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. That's right here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint, smoother than smooth. Mike Vrabel spoke right after General Manager John Robinson. And the head coach had this to say, but first, this is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Here's Mike Vrabel.
Hi, Mike. John just talked to us about the roster moves this week. From your perspective, how much can this maybe help refocus the defense as you all try to improve the play on the field?
Oh, man, I think that we should always be focused. We should always be attentive in meetings and, you know, continue to teach and coach and practice. I mean, I don't know what idea that is. We're going to have to, you know, play better here after the first seven games. And again, we got an opponent to prepare for. We've got the Bears, huge challenge in front of us. So, you know, all I can do is continue to try to impress upon these guys the keys and how we need to play this game.
Mike, I know John said you don't make moves to, I guess, send messages in the locker room, but when you have three players that released from yesterday, just what does that do to the locker room? How should guys respond to it?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm not in the locker room. You know, I mean, we all have a job to do. Ours as coaches is to get the players ready. Players is to be prepared, you know, and execute and work hand in hand with the coaches. So I'm not sure, you know, how it's received.
And one on Desmond King, I know he's doing the Zooms. How has that gone so far with him? What's your interaction been like with him and trying to get him ready to play?
It's been similar to this. He's on the other end of a laptop or an iPad, and, you know, just trying to get to hear how we coach and hear how we teach. And, you know, we'll see, you know, as that goes on. It was just the, you know, kind of the second day that we've had him.
Mike, with the release of Vic Beasley, obviously, depth-wise, you're going to be relying on some younger players, whether that's going to be Roberson or Skipper or Ray, some of those guys. How do you feel like those guys have been developing? Because they don't have a whole lot of game experience, and now you're going to have to be counting on them.
Well, we'll see how they go throughout the week, Terry. You know, I mean, that's how it goes in this league. That could be somebody from that's here, somebody that's not there. There's a lot of different possibilities. But, you know, we just have to continue to work these guys through the week and then see, you know, where we go on Sunday. But those guys have all been working extremely hard, and, you know, they all have to have at that position, you know, roles in the kicking game. You know, that's something that's important as well.
Sorry about that. Coach, with Beasley, obviously production, but what was it that you saw as a group to make this decision at this point, you know, during the season?
You know, we're focused on the Bears. My focus is on the Bears and trying to get us back to playing winning football, complimentary football, the things that we believe in. And when we're at our best, you know, we've got a way that we play, and that's evident fixing those mistakes and correcting those things and trying to eliminate, you know, some of the things that we've seen that have cost us games.
So focusing on the Bears, there's a possibility that you'll have Roberson ready to go. What are some of the things that you feel he brings to the table that can help you guys?
Teron, we ask every player that's with us, whether they're on the active roster or the practice squad, to be prepared to play in a football game. And so I hope that they've all done that. So I don't think that this would be any different. They're all expected to be ready to play, have a role in a kicking game, and try to execute that role to the best of their ability.
Yeah, Coach, with Chicago, what stands out about them when you watch them on tape? What have you seen from them so far through these first couple weeks?
Excellent defense. You know, I mean, they got, you know, I mean, again, a really good front, fast, active linebackers. Secondary is aggressive. You know, they've got two rangy safeties. But, you know, I mean, the corners on third down, I mean, this is a tough task here on third down. Number one in the league, obviously offensively. You know, Montgomery's forced 26 missed tackles. This is a strong runner. So this is a runner who can stiff arm, can jump cut, catches the ball out of the backfield. Robinson is obviously an excellent number one receiver. got a lot of faith in, obviously, Foles throwing the football to him from what I've seen on tape, the type of athlete that he is. Mooney has developed into, you know, a guy that they can move the ball down the field with. So it's going to always be a huge challenge to be able to, you know, great returner. Patterson is probably the best returner in the league, one of the best, excellent gunner. So we watched all that stuff and tried to share with them those keys here this morning.
What did the did you sacrifice the play hard, love ball ethic for Vic? And what did his presence say about the true meaning of those mantras?
Well, we don't ever want to sacrifice anything. We're going to have to try to make sure we're doing those things better this week, Paul. You know, each and every week as we practice, but especially, you know, coming off a game that, you know, uncharacteristically just was some things that, you know, we don't think that we can do and still win football games. So we're always going to have to do that with whoever's here. That's just something that we believe in, and that's led to our success.
Yeah, Mike, on the Vic front, I mean, you're a guy obviously that had a long and very excellent career at the edge rusher position. Do you feel, I guess, maybe any personal disappointment here that, you know, here was a guy at that same position that I'm sure you probably thought you could get something out of, but ultimately that it did not work out?
I would say that I get personal disappointment from losing. You know, it's an awful feeling to lose in this league. So I want to coach better, you know, this week. I want to be into it. I want to try to help the players prepare, help them as we go through meetings, help them as we go through practice, finding ways to let them be ready to do their job on Sunday. That's what you know, bothered me was losing.
Sure. And on the special teams front, I guess, you know, you mentioned Brett, certainly questions about him for this weekend. If he's not in, who's your holder? Who's the backup holder at this point?
Well, that's why we practice. You know, John will be out there seeing what Brett can do. And then, you know, working some other guys based on how he feels.
Yeah, Mike, you know, obviously given your background with Joseph, and you got Brinkley, a guy who's been with the team a long time, and then Vic, the significant investment in him, how difficult were these decisions to make, and what do you get out of, in your opinion, what's the benefit in doing it now?
Well, you know, I think John and I have always made it clear we try to make the decisions that are in the best interest of the football team. And so then now the next decisions are, you know, how we're going to practice, how, you know, what's the schedule going to look like? What's the 48 game day roster going to look like? All things that are going to help us as we move forward here against Chicago.
There you go. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. What did you think?
Well, one little thing that I picked up on, and I don't know if I would read into it too much. I guess we're still in the question mark phase of Brett Kern. We'll see what he can do at practice. I guess that maybe leads you to believe he's going to be out there trying to catch the ball, hold the ball, all that stuff. But on the replacements for Beasley, he said, you know, I think it was Terry McCormick that was asking about Roberson and the other options on the roster right now. And he says, we got to have production either from somebody that's here or somebody that's not here, which means they're scouring the practice squads, the waiver wire, to see if there is another guy that they could bring in to just have another person out there. I thought that was interesting. He didn't say, hey, we've got guys we think can do the job. It's like,
yeah,
we don't know who can do the job, but we know it wasn't Beasley.
Right. Well, it just kind of make you wonder, and I mean, this happens, but especially in this year with it being even more difficult to bring a guy in. Okay, you make the moves. Don't necessarily disagree with the moves that you just made, but what's the plan? And it kind of sounds like they don't necessarily have one yet, or they haven't completely solidified that plan. Now, does that change by tomorrow? We'll find out. But again, if you bring in guys outside of the organization that aren't on your practice squad, whether they're free agents or off somebody else's practice squad, I mean, when can they help you? Probably right. Won't be
That's
this
right.
Week.
That is maybe something we haven't explored as much, is you know, they didn't set themselves up very much for plan B, plan C, especially after trading Correa, right? It's one thing to say, okay, Beasley's a chance. And then all summer we were saying, boy, you got to have another guy. So it made all the sense in the world that, you know, Clowney was the guy. I mean, say what you will about how he's played, but where would they be without him? Who would they put over there? They don't have bodies, right? They lost Roberson, in fairness. He was supposed to be part of the rotation. But there weren't a whole lot of layers there at that position. And so right now you're looking over there and say, you got Landry and you got Clowney, and then who's the third guy? Whoever it is, it's somebody that hasn't done a whole lot in the league.
This reminds me of a 90s wrestling promo. Who's the third man? We don't know.
You got to find him. I mean, you know, they drafted Darrington Evans to be the backup to Derrick Henry, right? To offset Derrick Henry's touches and carries. And Darrington Evans has been nowhere to be. Well, he's just been hurt.
He's been hurt.
And so it's just he's not been available. So what do? Okay, so you bring in a guy like McNichols. McNichols is what he is. He's a guy who's been like a practice squad guy, a training camp guy, you know, had, you know, a moment here and there, a cup of coffee, a cup of tea in the NFL, and that's that.
Dante Did he have Foreman. Coffee or tea? Does he prefer coffee or tea?
Kind of tea?
I don't know if he's a morning guy or, you know,
hot
I don't know.
Tea or
hot tea, cold. I don't know. I don't,
iced coffee?
Good,
sweet.
Good
unsweet.
Questions.
He's done all right, though. You know,
Dante Foreman is a guy we watch a little bit in small doses with the Texans, and I knew the name from his time in Houston. But, you know, so you go and you get production out of these guys. That's what the league does. And so now they've got to figure out a way to try to get production out of
they need
guys
a Foreman or a Ferkser, or they need some, you know, last year was Roberson. Roberson was that guy last year. Like, wait a minute, I've never heard of this guy, and man, he's getting to the quarterback.
Boy, they could use Spillane, don't you think?
Well, he's more of an inside guy. How crazy is it the Steelers have Spillane and Avery Williamson?
But he's a playmaker.
Two ex-Titans.
Yeah. Look at Spillane with the Steelers. I mean, he's a playmaker. He is making
plays. He's done well.
Plays. He has done really well. All right, we'll come back, and we will close up shop for hour number two of Darren Donick and Chase next. Tim Hasselbeck coming up at high noon, like he does every Wednesday. Just got word also Charlotte head coach Will Healy would join us at 1 o'clock. Former Austin Peay head coach, now with Charlotte. They'll be in the Borough on Saturday. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, the 49ers have shut down their facility. One of their wide receivers, Bourne, has tested positive, and they have shut down their facilities. They are scheduled to play tomorrow night against the Packers. Yikes. Mm-hmm. Don't know if there's going to be a Thursday night football game. Not sure.
I don't know about that either.
All signs are pointing towards a doubleheader on Monday night, would be my guess.
Which I kind of wish that was the case most weeks anyway, but that's just me.
Yeah, well, I think what you do is kind of what they did, although the Titans got pushed to Tuesday, so... Would you see the scheduled Monday night game is the Patriots at the Jets? So that's one on Eastern time zone. I know. Yikes. 2-5 at 0-8.
It's kind of fun to watch the really bad teams, though.
No,
for a little bit.
No, it's not.
Really.
It's just to see how bad.
Now, we have another activity in our state that we can do now with those teams. So, you know, I may or may not partake in that, but.
Yeah. I mean, there's that, but I mean, so do you do that game? Do you push it earlier? Do you do that game earlier? And then since the game was scheduled to be in San Fran, you do that out there as the late night? As the late game?
Now that makes sense, but ESPN may go, now wait a minute. Now hold on a second. It may not be a good.
Now hold on a second.
It may not be a great matchup. But this is our time slot. This is Monday Night Football. So, no, we're not gonna move that. Because I believe Fox would have to – I mean, Fox would be airing the 49ers and the Packers game because that's their Thursday night game. So, I mean, it just depends. I mean, I don't – that would make – like I said, that would make sense. But I don't know if ESPN's going to give up the primetime slot to Fox –
Do they want to go up against?
You could put it on Sunday, couldn't you? I mean, that is an option. Now, I'm looking at Cam Inman, who covers the 49ers for the San Jose Mercury News. As of 1 minute, 2 minutes ago, no change in the game scheduled for Thursday at 5:20 Pacific time, per NFL spokesman. So as of now, the game is still tomorrow. Now, we know that could change. But what about Sunday? Don't you think that's possible?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's that. Could get pushed to Sunday. I just kind of feel like whenever you – I mean, if they're shut down today, are they going to be back open tomorrow? If they're shut down again tomorrow, you know, every day that goes by, right, it just keeps
– As we know, we've been through it. It can – you never know.
Right. It just kind of gets pushed, you know?
But you kind of have to make a call because the travel would take place for the team that's traveling today, right? You got to get there. And I mean, day of game, I guess, but that's going out to the – is the game in Green Bay or in San Fran?
San Fran.
San Fran.
So Green Bay's got to get out there. They got to know, am I going or am I not going?
I wonder.
So they've only got a couple more hours, really, before they have to make a decision. So that was a significant piece of info there. The guy, I mean, as any good beat writer should, he checked with the league. Is the game still on? Yeah, the game's still on.
Yeah, because, I mean, even if they did a swap, you know, swapped another game, well, I guess you can't do that. You can't make a team that thinks they're, I don't know what I was thinking, think they're going to play on Sunday. Hey, you're playing Thursday. Surprise. Good luck. Yeah, they're going to have to make a call soon to move it or not.
I just can't imagine that they're actually going to play tomorrow.
I don't see it.
I don't see it either.
Maybe the silver lining in this is COVID is the one that is the thing that's going to make the NFL rethink Thursday night football. Because so many of the, you know, well, not so many, but they've moved a couple already that they might look at it, look at data and say, well, okay, maybe we're better off doing that. Because I miss the big Thursday night college games. I do. I know there's still some, and we got the Maction that's coming back, and but, you know, you used to have some bigger college games on Thursday, and they've been overshadowed by some bad NFL matchups. And I would rather have two Monday night games and have that college Thursday game. It's just my personal opinion.
Yeah. If you got a big college game on Thursday and a crappy NFL game, then just watch the college game.
I know.
It's that simple. What do you care? What do you care about, you know, Cincinnati versus Cleveland, you know, on Thursday night when they had one win combined between the two teams at that point? Just watch the big college football. But there hasn't been. I mean, when's typically what? You got a Louisville Florida State game. I mean, what's been the big Thursday night college football matchup over the years?
Well, it's been a while because Thursday night football has been
right. You don't ever see the SEC. You don't ever, you know, you don't
right.
Ever.
But there was a time where you did. You had bigger games, but then the NFL kind of took it over. That's what I'm saying. You know, they're used to later in the season in November, you'd have some ACC matchups and things like that. But you know, you don't have any marquee matchups anymore because the NFL has it.
We'll come back and start the third hour with our man Tim Hasselbeck. But right now I'm going to talk to you about DraftKings because it is live right here in our wonderful state of Tennessee. With mobile sports betting, it's up and running on DraftKings. You may know them as the leading daily fantasy brand, but they have taken their passion for sports and developed America's top-rated sportsbook app. This isn't some offshore operation like a lot of the other gambling sites. DraftKings is a legitimate sportsbook that's based right here in the U.S., with the DraftKings Sportsbook app, you can bet from wherever, whenever. You don't even have to leave your house. How cool is that? Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code 1025GAME when you sign up. For a limited time, all new users can get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Once again, that code 1025GAME. and you get your deposit bonus up to $1,000. That's only a DraftKings Sportsbook app. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and you want help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.